What time is it, you wonder? Well, it's time for Drinks with Tony on KPCR LP Santa Cruz 101.9 FM. Bop-ba-da-bop-bop. Sound. Tony Duchesne here. Welcome to episode 130 of Drinks with Tony and my guest, Gabriel Valentin. He's the author of the graphic novel Digital Lizards of Doom. The winter quarter is finally over at UCLA Extension, and I got all my grades in. And I finally get a break. But, you know, isn't it weird when the pace is really high and our minds and bodies are like totally adapting to it and just getting deadlines done after deadlines, staying up late at night, waking up early in the morning, grading papers. And then it all comes to a stop and the body and brain just fight to not do anything except eat Trader Joe's oven-baked cheese bites with black summer truffle oil and watch too many YouTube videos about the blockchain technology? I'm glad you understand.
Hi, I'm Gabriel Valentin, and this is Drinks with Tony.
Get on the Drinks with Tony show, yeah.
You're listening to Drinks with Tony. I'm your host, Tony Duchesne. Today on the show, we have Gabriel Valentin. He's the author of the graphic novel, Digital Lizards of Doom. Gabriel, how's it going?
It's going good. What's up?
Not much. You're Digital Lizards of Doom. This is a graphic novel, but it's even more than that, right?
Yeah, so we started off, the story started off in my head back in 2000. At the time, I wanted to produce a graphic novel, but I didn't have the resources or the funding or even, I didn't really know how to do something like that. I just had the story in my head. So me being a musician, I felt like what was the best way to introduce the world to these characters in a small, independent way that I already was aware of how the world worked. So me being me, I was like, let's just make a band for now. And then hopefully, you know, later on down the line, I can get some stuff together and we can release the book and the story the way it's meant. Yeah, we have this, I think, 46 song catalog right now that just introduces these characters and has introduced these characters to people. And now, as of last year, 2020, we got picked up by Clover Publishing Companies in the world, actually. And now we can introduce the audience to the larger all of these songs and these characters together.
I just love that angle. Because you get it. Yeah, what you're doing is you got a story in mind. You're like, okay, no. And those are the most beautiful things in the world. I got this thing. And no one's going to do anything with it. What do I do to get it out there?
Yeah. Yeah. I've had to experience that a lot. Not even in like a, oh, just kind of like, I think my ideas are a little weird. I'm a weird person. So sometimes it's hard to get people on board with the things that I want to do. And so I've learned through trial and error that if I show them a proof of concept or an idea, or instead of just an idea, usually I have pretty good luck with someone being like, oh, hey, look, that's super weird, but we get what you're trying to do. Yeah, we want to be a part of that. So I was like, okay, just one thing at a time. And here we are with a whole book series. We have 7 more of these things coming out. So it's wild. It's so crazy.
And this started, when did this start? Did you say 20 years ago?
Oh no, 2000. I had the idea in 2013.
Okay.
Our first appearance as Digital Lizards of Doom was 2014. Actually February 16th, 14th or 16th of 2014 was our first official show as Digital Lizards of Doom. And we had Dizzy Doom, which is our heroic lizard, and then Commander Echo, which is our evil robot, and they were on stage and they had a whole Nerf gun battle, and they they had this whole stage performance that we put together, and it was at the House of Blues in San Diego, and it was amazing. It was incredible. So,
and I love the concept part of it, because I was watching a little bit of some of the YouTube videos of what you guys have done, and I'm just like, oh my god, this is like GWAR, but even better. You know, it's
GWAR, but better. Oh my god, you just blew my mind, man. Thank you so much.
Well, it's because you guys are creating.
I hope they don't come after me for that.
Well, they might chop your head off and then blood will spew into the audience. Wouldn't that be an honor?
That would be an honor. If they held up a giant like Gabriel Valentin puppet and like decapitated me and like, you know, sacrificed me to the Lucifer or something, that'd be amazing.
Yeah. I love how our you know, just who we adore in life, where a lot of people may not know who they are, and you're just like, oh no, if I can be it, you know, if I could, people are like, oh, I want to be on stage with Billie Eilish, and you're like, no, put me in a sweaty room with GWAR and I'll be all right, you know.
Dude, I was GWAR, Aquabats, Misfits. I guess everyone knows Iron Maiden at this point, but Iron Maiden too is a huge influence for me. It's funny, like I've said this a couple times, and I either confuse people or people get it when I say this, but I think D-Lod's biggest influences are Blink-182, Iron Maiden, The Misfits, Tool, Judas Priest, Queen, and like The Offspring. And that's very fun. It's very rare that someone's like, oh yeah, I see what's going on. Like I can see all of those things in there. Usually I just get people looking at me like I'm a psychopath. But yeah, it's like, it's the love of music. It's the pushing the boundaries. It's the stage performance. It's the fun, upbeat vibes. It's the lyrical content. It's the expanding your mind. It's the good vibes, the fun, and then having a stage performance that is bizarre and kind of out there. So hopefully it's cool. Yeah. Hopefully people like it.
Now your shows, did I hear this right, that they were like, they were on like Saturday mornings sometimes as a Saturday morning cartoon band situation? Or am I out of my mind? Did I drop acid? You're looking at me like I just dropped acid.
No. No, so we said that a lot. Like we said Saturday morning cartoon show. I don't know. I probably said that phrase more than any other phrase in my entire life.
Oh, okay.
So we had a series in LA, in Hollywood, called the Digital Lizards of Doom show. And it was every Wednesday night right before Comedy Central. It was filmed at Meltdown Comics in LA, in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And it was right before Comedy Central would do the Meltdown show, mm-hmm. which was pretty popular for a couple years. So our show was like that Wednesday right before it, every Wednesday right before it. And it was kind of cool because we'd get like a lot of the people in there to watch our show that would just like hang out and wait. You know, they didn't give a crap about us, but they were waiting for the comedy show. So every once in a while we'd get some people that were like, oh, haha, that's kind of cool. Yeah. But yeah, we would highlight just pop culture and talk about our favorite things, what's inspiring us, what we're currently working on. You know, we talked about Cartoon Network, and we had animators on the show sometimes. We had Mr. Ha from Linkin Park. We had some people from Warner Brothers Interactive. We had Jace Hall from IGN and Twin Galaxies. So basically it was like just a place where we would hang out on a couch and talk about all of the stuff that we love as geeks and nerds, and just get it all out and talk about news and whatever was going on. And in that, way we would promote what we're working on too. Like, yeah, this is why Commander Echo represents 1950s, 1960s horror. This is why Dizzy Doom represents American indie comics. This is why Dana Deathly represents anime and manga, and so on and so on. So we would basically give people like a front row view to the world that we were trying to build, and just basically promote our brand and invite other people to come and share in it with us.
Was that in the back room? Because they had that whole podcast area set up in the front, right? Of like, was that the Nerd Melt?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we did Nerd Melt. We did the Nerdist Room a couple times. We were in Nerdist did their improv class thing, right, there for a while. We were in that room a couple times. When it was really busy though, because like no one gave a crap about us except the owners. Like the owners, shout out to Gaston and Francisco. Those guys are my heroes. I love those guys. They were the only ones who were like really rooting for us. So like if it was between Comedy Central needed a big space to film a promo, we got the boot. And then we would just go and, you know, it's like you guys can have this little corner with all the old Sega Genesis games and stuff. And we're like, okay, you know. Yeah. So that's how it worked. But it was fun, man. It was a lot of fun. And we were there for that, you know, for any other reason than just to promote what we were doing and just remind people about what we love about pop culture and this world and comics and music and video games and movies. And so, yeah, it was a fun environment. I was devastated when we lost Meltdown. That was a sucky year for sure.
Yeah, I went there for some shows, mostly comedy shows. I wish I knew about yours because I would have gone and been a fanboy of that too. But it was just, the energy of the place. It's so unique. When you're standing in line, waiting for like a comedy show or whatever, with all these comic books around, and I love the melding of a bunch of different like things you wouldn't normally see. And you know, it's just like a back door comedy room where,
yeah,
and then they got the front and they're filming and doing podcast stuff, and then you can buy comics and browse comics if you want. It's just I think it's one of the beauties of Los Angeles I love so much. Because I came down in 2013, so I was just like, wow.
Oh, right on, man.
My eyes were all open. Yeah, it
was cool. I can't wait, man. I can't wait to hang out and do something cool with you when I get back up there. I'm normally up there a lot, mm-hmm. So I'm in San Diego right now. But yeah, on a normal schedule, yeah, we got to go get drinks with Tony, IRL, man.
Drinks with Tony IRL. Yeah, that'd be great. And we'll do some Instagram selfies and it'll just be huge. I can't wait for IRL, man. How's it been? How you been dealing with like not doing stuff? I mean, we're almost on a year of just like Netflix. I mean, that's me. I don't know how you've been.
Oh, Netflix is my queen, is my regal goddess, my eternal lover right now. Netflix is what's getting me by, man. It's been wild, dude. It's been weird. I feel like that's such a duh thing to say because I feel like it's been hard for everybody, but there's two things. I feel like on one hand it's been I don't think I'd be able to be performing a lot of shows right now anyways, which is kind of interesting. Just because when the publisher picked us up, it's actually bizarre. The publisher picked us up at the end of March 2020. So we got picked up right as all the COVID stuff was taken off. And I went right into, I mean, book one was pretty much finished. Well, actually, book one was finished in my in my mind, but the publisher came in and they made a ton of adjustments and minor changes. So we went back into pre-production or back into production.
Did you like those? Did you like those notes that the publisher gave you? Were you like, oh man, you're right. That makes sense.
Yeah. You know, for like 95% of them. Yeah. And then, but they were also super, super rad. So if they said something that I didn't agree with, I would just say, hey, like, why do you guys want to change that part? And they would say, oh, because this doesn't make sense. And I said, well, this ties into something that's going to be in book three. And they would say, oh, okay. And well, can you explain that a little bit more then? And I'm like, sure, easy. And then, and then I'd go back and I'd redraw, you know. So,
like good notes. But I love good notes from good editors and publishers. There's that nothing beats it when you get great notes and you're just going, I am with the right team. Oh my God. It's beautiful.
Yeah. My buddy Dan Brozo, who actually did the Digital Lizards of Doom live at Meltdown show with me. He was a writer and producer for that show. I was able to bring him in as an editor and producer for the book series. And that was incredible because he's my secret weapon. He never watches any of my press. So he's never going to see this probably, but he really is. He's my secret weapon. I love that guy. I would do anything for that guy. He really cares about the story, but he's also my harshest critic. So it's this really cool balance. Like, I know if I can impress Dan, I've done something really good because he is, can I curse on this show?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. He is fucking hard to impress. So like, and that's not me trying to pat myself on the back or anything. I'm just being dead serious. Like he grills me on this stuff. So, you know, he'll be like, why is this here? What is the intention for this? Why does he say that instead of this? And why does she go here when she should have gone here? Because this is what she mentioned. So he really makes me just like, if anything, if nothing else, just really make sure I know my own story. So I have to like prepare for battle, like when I go into a meeting with him in a friendly way, because we love each other. Yeah. But he's great. He really makes me hone in on the characters' voices. He makes sure that each character talks differently. And actually this ties back into your question because that was what the last year was like for me was, okay, the story just existed in my brain. Now it's real. And we're doing it for real. We're doing it with a legitimate company. We're doing it with a budget. We're doing it with a marketing team. So everything has to be tight. So for the last year, most of my work has been on the computer writing. You know, I'm about to start book four. I just wrapped up book three. Yeah. Like I just wrapped up book three. We're in pre-production for book two and three at the same time now. The publisher wants to release, actually I can't say when they want to release, but the publisher what? Wants to,
no
wants,
one listens to this. Specific... Go ahead. Say everything. Spill it all.
I don't know. I've been yelled at a couple times because I'm a bean spiller, man. But next year they want to do a couple releases next year.
Cool.
So they want to double down on a couple things. So we're kind of stacking them up. But yeah, so it's weird because it has sucked. But at the same time, I don't think I'd be able to play or perform live music right now as it was. Because every time I think I'm about to get a break, I just go back into a writer's room or back into a meeting about a product they want to make or a marketing idea they have. And luckily they run everything by me, which is really awesome. And it makes me feel really good about the brand because it's not just my thing anymore. There's other people attached to it, but yet everyone seems to be on board with making sure that the integrity of it stays the same and not just turning it into some messed up thing, you know? So, but
it can easily happen. You know, if you got the wrong people that are just like We have opinions, and they're dressed in suits, and you're just going, no. They just, you know, why don't you go create something really dumb on your time and not do it on my stuff?
Yeah, I've had a couple of those meetings that have been interesting, and I've learned this past year. I don't know jack shit about anything. I don't know anything. And anytime I feel like I do know something, I'm just going to remind myself that I don't know shit, because, man, I have been slapped around this year, man. Like, oof. Like, every time I was like, oh, shit. Oh, yeah, I got this. Like, doing big things. It was just like, bah, bah, just like reminded me, like, no, dude, you're nobody, man. Like, you got a lot of stuff to learn. So it's been a trip, man. In a good way, in a positive way. Like, I think I have the right attitude for the journey. So I'm just like, I'm just going with it. So
there's almost a beauty to realizing we don't know what the hell's going on. That it's like such a nice place to come from. You know, it's kind of a relief, because then we can go, oh, okay, I don't know what's going on. And then I'll work on this project. And this doesn't, who knows what this is? But then, you know, that feeling of not knowing actually kind of opens doors for other things, I feel like.
Oh, yeah, totally. I feel like, you know, not to keep bringing it back to this, but when book one went back into production, my initial reaction was like, why are we going back into production? It's finished. It's done. Don't you guys like it? I thought you liked it. You don't like it? What's wrong with it? You know, and like all these crazy questions. And then I realized, no, it's just part of the refining process. It's part of sometimes people want to change things, A, to feel like they're a part of it. They want to add their influence to it. They also, it'll help them, changing something will also help them understand it more, or become closer to it. So yeah, you know, I had a lot of these preconceived ideas about, you know, I've worked in Hollywood for a very long time. So it was like suits and execs and all of this stuff, and that stuff is real. It exists. I could tell you some crazy stories. That's a different, we'll have to do a different podcast about, we'll have to do Gabe's crazy Hollywood stories, because man, I got some stuff. But
I want to read that book too. Great Gabe's crazy Hollywood stories.
Goodness, man. And I don't know. I've been very guarded the past couple of years. Like, oh, it's mine. I got to hold on to my stuff. But some people just want to make cool shit too. And I've learned that, and it's been really refreshing. You know, I got jaded there for a little while. You know, I was still doing stuff, but I got jaded for a little bit, and then I've kind of come back to a really nice calming place. Like, you know what? Like what you're saying, no one knows what's going on.
Yeah,
no one knows what's going on. Like, we're all just making it up as we go along. So cool. Let me just, and it's given me a lot of freedom. It's given me a lot of creative freedom and a lot of creative ideas. And it's allowed me to feel more confident when I'm having meetings that otherwise would be very intimidating for me to have. So, yeah, it's kind of a Zen place to be, in a weird kind of messed up way.
Yeah, it is. It's, I think what it does is it kind of keeps us, there's just that beauty when like, especially like if we start writing or we're just starting something, like when we're young and we got that fire, we kind of got the delusion, but we're also amateurs at the same time. And if we could just still kind of tap that a little bit, where it's just like, oh yeah, I don't know what I'm doing, even though I've been doing it for, you know, years, you can go back to it and go, it's okay not to know. It's just okay. Relax.
Yeah. Yeah.
It drives me nuts when people are like, you know, oh, you haven't read James Joyce. You don't even know how to write then. I don't even know what you're talking about. And I'm like, what? No. But James Joyce sounds like a good fella. Is he alive? Can I talk to him? Oh, okay. He's dead. All right. Well, I'll still read him. You know.
And the thing is, too, I've had a lot of mentors in the music scene. And I'm starting to get mentors in the writing scene. I have had mentors in the writing scene, but I don't know. They're more like peers, I guess. And I'm starting to find my mentors in the writing scene, which has been really cool. But in the music scene, one of my favorite mentors was Jeff Forrest. He produced the first couple Blink records, and he did As I Lay Dying and Atreyu and Pierce the Veil and a lot of pop punk stuff and metal stuff. And one of the things he told me, I remember having this whole conversation with him one time about whether, and this was years ago, I met him when I was 18 years old. And so this was 11 years ago. And I asked him, I said, what, like, should I learn music? Well, that, you know, it was just a random question. It was just like, I want my music to get better. Should I learn how to read music? And he goes, how would that help you? And I said, well, if I can understand music better, I can write better songs. He's like, I like your songs. And I was like, well, but I could write better ones if I learn how to read music. And he goes, why? And I'm like, because smart people know how to read music. And he goes, like, you know, just expose yourself to more art. He's like, and he told me, he goes, there's certain people who I think should know how to read music. And there are certain people who I think should not know how to read music. And he's like, you're the type of person, you get hung up on rules a lot, you know, talking to me. He's like, you want to know the rules. You get hung up on rules, and you let them put you in a box. He's like, I think you're the last person who should ever go and learn how to read music. It's like, I think you should just keep making weird stuff. And if it's good, it's good. If it's not, I'll let you know. And I'm like, okay, you know, and I still go back and forth. You know, I'm getting older now, so I'm kind of like, I think about it from time to time, but and by this point, I do know how to read, you know, basic sheet music and tablatures and things like that, but and piano scores and such. But it was just, it blew my mind, because it was like I had this whole wall built up for myself. Like, I had no business being here. I had no business making an album or a song. I had to go read the James Joyce book before I could become worthy enough, you know. And I had all these people telling me that too, like, your music can't be good yet if you don't know this or you don't do that. And I believe it. And I was just like, oh, I guess they're right. I guess my music can't be good enough. And then Jeff Forrest just kind of set me straight and was like, nah, I think your music's rad. And what the hell do I know? Just, you know, Grammy award winning producer, I guess. So, it was just kind of an interesting thing. And I've just taken that with me in almost every aspect of life. And for anyone watching who doesn't know me personally or on a personal level, I am not saying I don't need, you know, your ways or whatever, but it's just that just because what your idea that you have is kind of weird doesn't mean it's not good. Doesn't mean it's not bad either. But just try it and refine it and let people in and see what happens. And it's just been it's been a crazy ride, man. It's like all these people telling me, like, I was told I couldn't play guitar. I was told I couldn't play bass. I was told I couldn't write a comic book. I was told I couldn't write. I was told I couldn't, you know, I would never find a publisher because I wasn't doing it the right way. I just did it.
Yeah.
You know, I just did it.
Did some of the people telling you no kind of put a fire in you and go, oh yeah, well watch this. Did you kind of have that inside as well?
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. It was such a like, no, fuck you, man, I'm gonna do this.
Yeah, yeah. There's such a beautiful like, I love the word no. You'll never be able to do that. And then I'm like, oh really? And then that I'll get competitive and just say, well, let's find out. And,
yeah,
and it's kind of beautiful what no can inspire you to do, you know.
It really is, man. I'm not a competitive person, but when somebody tells me no, it really lights this fire inside of me. It was just like, fuck, you know, I didn't even really want to do that anyways, but now I just have to prove them wrong. Like, I was like already like, you know, 30-70 on that, but now I have to do it. You know?
Yeah. What were some of the early bands you're in? You've been in the music scene a lot, yeah? Or before this? Before Digital Lizards or Doom?
Yeah, so I was in a bluegrass band. My first band was a bluegrass band when I was 12 years old.
Wow.
I was 12 years old. I played in a bluegrass band, and it sucks because I cannot remember the name of it. I think we call ourselves Cigarettes and Beer. And I think the reason I can't remember if that's true or not is because I came up with that name and I thought it was really funny, but I'm not sure the other guys ever thought it was funny or if it ever caught on. So like, I don't really remember what we call ourselves, but I'm pretty sure it was like Cigarettes and Beer.
Were they older and, than you?
We played songs. What's that?
Were they older than
yeah,
you?
Most of them were in their 50s.
Wow. Cool.
50s or 60s. Yeah. Yeah, it was funny, man. But it was awesome. Like, they were the coolest guys ever. I mean, I was among legends. Like, it was such a cool experience. And we played songs like Irish Washerwoman and Crawdad River and, you know, The Devil Went Down to Georgia and stuff like that. And I was only allowed to listen to classical music and a little bit of classic rock growing up. So then I got into bluegrass. And Celtic music. My mom is Irish, so we were allowed to listen to a lot of Celtic music in the house. So then once I got into bluegrass, I kind of discovered bands like Flogging Molly and the Dropkick Murphys. And then I was like, that was like my gateway drug to bring it to my mom. Cause I was like, Mom, look, this is like Celtic music. It's just a lot faster. And, you know, they say bad words from time to time. And so she was totally okay with me listening to, Flogging Molly and Dropkick Murphys, the culture. And so then that was a gateway to punk rock. And I got into Social Distortion and Blink and the Misfits and Crass, the Offspring, Bad Religion, Anti-Flag, the list just went on and on and on. And I just started going to shows, and this was also around the time people were telling me I couldn't play guitar. And so I was like, I was going to these punk rock shows, and I was like, man, most of the guitar players I know play way better than these guys, but these guys sound way better.
Yeah.
And they're like, they're shredding and they're just playing power chords. I was like, well, I can do that. You know? So I was like, I guess I need to make a punk band. So then I got into punk, and it was weird. It was a weird time to get into punk rock. Like, I feel like I was born, I feel like I've always been born like a 5 years too late or 5 years too early. It's weird. Cause like, right as I was getting into punk rock, like the emo movement got really big. Cause this was like 2003 or four. And like all the bands that I wanted to play in, they started playing like Seosin and, like Dashboard Confessionals stuff, And that's, and I'm not harshing on any of that stuff. That stuff's great. It's good music, but I wanted to play punk rock. Yeah. So I didn't have any interest in like wearing, you know, like wearing the, all the stuff and like playing these songs about like heartbreak. And I was like, no, man, I want to talk about like fucking shit up, you know, like, let's talk about like, you know, like, and I love the Misfits. I love the Misfits because of the fantasy element. Like, and they're to this day, one of my favorite bands because they were able to take that like just vigorous, crazy, raw punk sound, but then all their lyrics are fantasy based about, you know, science fiction movies and horror movies and demons and witches. And so that was like what I tried to do and recreate. And I came up with this band called Counterlaunch, and all of our songs, I mean, you could like listen to our catalog. I think we're still on like Pure Volume. Remember Pure Volume when that was the thing?
Yeah.
We were on Pure Volume, and like all of our songs, I mean, you can just like pinpoint, all right, this was stolen from an Iron Maiden track, this was stolen from a Misfits track, this was stolen from and yeah, I was never really like an angry person, so I wasn't, you know, as pissed off about the government as my friends were, and I thought that stuff was cool. I love Bad Religion, but I was like, yeah, you know, I don't know, but I don't know enough about George Bush or, you know, Obama to like have an opinion yet, so I'm just gonna like sing about demons and wizards and stuff like that, you know. So Counterlaunch is my band for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, because it's all about like it kind of drives me crazy when people glom on. I do enjoy bands that are like political and just gotta get in there, you know. I mean, like the old Minor Threat days and Everyone Against Reagan and all years, but that kind of has an expiration date on it if you don't understand it. But if you're getting into demons and you're getting into, it's essentially mythology, like the stories that we've been hearing for centuries and centuries, where those are the stories that can hang on, because it's just, you know, who wants to hear a George Bush song now? It doesn't mean anything, but I want to hear about a demon, you know.
That's like, that guy sucked back in 2004.
Yeah, it's like, who cares? And I don't even want to bring, you know, I mean, I agree he sucked, but I don't want to bring him into my zeitgeist. I don't want to sit there and go, you know, I don't want to have a big, like, you know, George Bush sucks tattoo on my arm. It's just like, no, you're joining the George Bush army. You're adding that energy to you. Don't do it, even though it says sucks at the bottom.
Yeah.
You're adding the bad energy, so. Oh, I sound like a hippie. Break me out of this. Yeah.
Yo, you're a good company, bro. You're in good company.
Well, so you start playing out and you're doing music, and then that's when you start to go, wait a second, I got with these songs, there's more to the story here. There's more to the story than the music. Is that how it happened?
Well, so in terms of D-Lod, that was years later. But I had always been a storyteller. Like, that was the connection for me. I wanted to write comics even at an early age. And my uncle got me into comic books, and I wanted, you know, him and I would draw comic books when he would come into town. We would just trace the covers together and do lots of fun stuff like that. And but I sucked at drawing. If I wasn't tracing anything, I couldn't draw. I was terrible, and it broke my heart. It still does. I wish I could draw. I just can't, and I've accepted that. But it's like, I was like, all right, I'm a storyteller though. I can tell these stories. I have these ideas. And then I found music, and I was like, whoa, okay. So like, I can draw a story with a song. I don't have to use paper. I can use this song to tell the story. So that became a way for me to exercise my creativity and get a lot of my ideas, the ideas in my head, out without having to embarrass myself with my terrible stick figure drawings. So that got me by for a long time, and so many different bands. We had a band called Smegma for a while that was just like this terrible, like, we thought it was like during my crust, I was trying to be crust punk for a while. It was so stupid. It was the stupidest thing ever. Like,
but you gotta try. Had a
place to live, and I was
you
like,
can't not try.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm like couch surfing. I'm a crust punk. It was the stupidest, stupidest thing I ever did in my life. And then Counterlodge came along, and we were touring for a while. And I think we had some pretty cool success on a small scale. Speaking of Flogging Molly, their record label at the time, Side One Dummy Records, started like courting us, which was really cool and exciting. And then we tried to do more tours and just get more involved with the local scene. But we were getting tired, and our bass player and our drummer kind of hated each other. So it was like a classic story. And I'm pretty sure they would have killed each other if we would have gone on one more tour. I'm like 99% sure they would have. Yeah, it was pretty gnarly towards the end. And then so I was devastated. And then I went back to Jeff Forrest. I was probably 24, 25 at the time. And I said, dude, I don't know what to do. You know, like, we got so far with this band. We toured all over the US, and I mean, countless nights and, you know, hotels and shows and booking stuff and talking to people all down the drain. Like, what's that about? And he goes, just make something new, man. Just take it with you. Make something new. And I'm like, all right. So I came up with Gabriel Valentin, because I didn't know what else to call it. It was just myself. And then I did that for a couple of years, and it just wasn't, I didn't like it. It felt empty. I missed playing with other people. Mm-hmm. And I missed having, like, the attention was on me too much. Mm-hmm. And I really hated that. I liked being a part of a band. It was easy to promote your band when you could talk about how good your drummer was and how good your bass player was. You know, I never talked about, I'm a really good singer, or I'm a really good guitar player. That I still don't say that stuff. It sounds weird to me. Yeah. But I like to be able to be like, come see our band, because our drummer freaking rips, dude. Like, don't come to see me, come to see him. You know, come yeah. see our keyboard player. You know, they're amazing. So I was like, all right, it's time to throw in the Gabriel Valentin towel. But through that period, I got into electronic music, because it was something I could do by myself while emulating this band type vibe by having like a computer being my band, essentially, yeah. and me just playing guitar and singing. So that gave me the sound that I was looking for Digital Lizards of Doom. And then I went back, I basically fused those two things together, the Gabriel Valentin solo project and Counterlaunch together. And I said, all right, I want this electronic, punk rock, bluesy, metal band. And we're going to sing about interesting stuff. And I was working on this story at the time, which was called Digital Lizards of Doom. And so I said, you know, I'm just going to use that as a placeholder for now. I'm just going to call it Digital Lizards of Doom and see what happens. And then I'll change the band name later, you know, once like I put the book out, because that will just totally not make sense. And then, of course, we ended up getting picked up by an Australian record label, Noise Cartel Records, at the end of 2014. And it was like a year into us being a band. And I remember being like, well, this is weird, because they just signed Digital Lizards of Doom. So like, what does that mean? You know, like, and so we started touring a lot with Digital Lizards of Doom. And I had friends come and play different instruments with me and fill in on different songs from time to time. And the the book, the story, kind of took a back burner, even though we still had the robot and the lizard coming out on stage and having this interaction. But it was like, okay, there's a record label interested in us. They're investing in us. Let's see where this takes us. So then, you know, we went to Australia and Mexico and New Zealand and all over the US. And it was like, okay, cool. Stuff's happening. Stuff's moving. And then, you know, people started asking questions like, hey, why is it called Digital Lizards of Doom? Hey, why do you have a robot and a lizard on the stage? So then everything came back around full circle. And it was like, okay, I think the mechanism worked. I think people understood it was about something else. And now it's time to deliver the book. And that basically brought us into 2020, where I was like, or 2019 technically, when I finished the story, the entire story. And then 2020 was when we actually released the book for the first time. And
now
here we are.
Do you realize Digital Lizards of Doom might not even be here if the bassist and guitarist didn't hate each other's guts? If there was absolute love there, you may not even be here right now. You may be in that band still, huge, and never have done any.
Wow.
Does that blow your mind?
That actually does blow my mind a little bit. Wow. That's crazy. I never even thought about that before, actually.
I love it when you're just, when things like that happen, and at the moment you're just like, why can't these guys, you know, something like your situation, why can't they just get along, because we're doing good and they're just,
yeah,
they're killing me, man. And then you move on to other things and all of a sudden it all comes into place later and you're like, I'm so happy. Like, I do these things, I'm like, I'm so happy that person really sucked and I had to get them. It's if that didn't happen, that wouldn't have moved me this way. And you know,
yeah,
It's all a beautiful journey, I guess.
It is, man. I'm kind of tripping out on that right now because I'm thinking about that, and I'm like, what if we would have signed with Side One Dummy Records? And wow, like that's totally insane. Like,
yeah. Ugh, I mean, yeah. You might have a mansion in the Hollywood Hills right now, but who needs that when you got Digital Lizards?
That's true. Boom. Yeah, man. Did you get a chance to read the book?
I read part of it. Yeah. I try not to read too much of stuff so I can come in not asking too many questions about the story itself. You know what I'm saying?
But cool. Yeah.
Cool. I tend to read things after. Great. I even interviewed my friend last week and he's on this week's show and he has a new memoir out, but I couldn't read it because I was like, no, I'll ask him too many questions about that. I got to just
stop.
That's good fun. That's hey, Gabriel, cool. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Dude, no worries, man. Anytime, man. We should do another one with Hollywood Stories.
We will.
Gabe's Hollywood Stories.
Let's do that in person. Let's get vaccinated and do it in all person.
Right. I'm down, man. I'll shoot it up.
Gabriel Valentin on Drinks with Tony. Check out his new book, Digital Lizards of Doom. Stay tuned next week. We have on the show Keith Rosen. Sorry. He's rescheduled to appear to discuss his new book, Folk Songs for Trauma Surgeons. Do you want to be on Drinks with Tony? Just get your book published. Well, how do I do that? You write a great book. What's the secret to writing a great book? Sitting down, writing every day, day after day, and just doing it. Why not start now? And then, by the time Drinks with Tony airs next week, you'll be 7 days into writing your big-time, famous, best-selling book. Do it. Just do it. And thanks for listening. I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to Drinks with Tony. You are on your radio dial at 101.9 FM, KPCR LP, Santa Cruz.